Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. It's Saturday, 9th of December, and I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Pete Donaldson. And how do you like that?
Bloody Nora, it's Saturday.
It is.
Oh, the best day of the week for a lot of people.
I love Saturdays.
Do you
I mean, I guess you've got to work a lot more than I have to on a Saturday, but I just feel good vibes when I get up on a Saturday. Yeah. I'm off down the DIY store to buy stuff I don't need.
DIY store? So you've changed it from the boozer.
Or Maplin's.
Or Maplin's, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you love Maplin's.
Yeah. R.I.P.
Yeah, it used to be Maplin's.
Pouring one out for Maplin's.
Yeah. Oh. Maplin's gone.
Maplin's? Oh, yeah. Come
we
on,
have,
Andy.
We have not got time for that now.
Nobody has submitted a question about Maplin's.
No.
Anyway, welcome one and all to the mailbag.
Yeah.
Quick reminder that if you want to get involved on the mailbag, you can tweet us on Twitter, currently known as X, at Football Ramble. Message us on Instagram, at Football Ramble. And of course, you can email us, show@footballramble.com. We're going to start with this question from Ronnie, who says, after Amazon broadcast every single Premier League game this week, do you think this should be the future? I understand people's objections to the 3 o'clock blackout on Saturdays, but part of me misses the sense of occasion when a Champions League game was broadcast on ITV once a week. Is there such a thing as too much access? Interesting. We do remember, of course, back in the day, Champions League games were much fewer and further between. I mean, it was actually once every 2 weeks, I think it was, when it was, you're talking about in the late 90s, Manchester United treble winning season.
Like the Ramble at the start.
And it was on terrestrial TV, of course, as mentioned there, which is a big change
exactly.
as well.
But without getting too sidetracked with that example, Ronnie is saying, is there too much football if it's on all the time? They show all the games.
So I'll just jump in quickly first, if I may.
You don't have to be quick, brother.
It might not be that quick, actually.
No.
I felt that when I started broadcasting various different day and evening parts, as they say in the terrible parlance of radio, on Talk Sport, I felt there was quite an interesting change, even in the 4 years I was there, between the way we would cover games on the radio would be, we would build up to a game, whoever was going to cover the game would cover the game, and the reaction would be a part of that. And then we would debrief and kind of pick over the bones of it, and the whole process would start again. During that four-year period, it quite obviously, for me at least, in the role I was doing, went from we lost all that, and it was just bang, game, bang, game, bang, game. Every single night it felt like there was a game. You know, you'd have Saturday, Sunday, Monday, night football. You'd have Tuesday, Wednesday would either be, whether it be League Cup or Champions League. Thursday night would be Europa League, potentially a League Cup game as well. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally you'd have Friday night football, because they brought that in, I think, the season after I started. So the question is, obviously, is there such a thing as too much access? I don't think it's too much access, because I think access is a good thing for people who like the sport. I think that's a red herring. I think it's almost certainly now just too much football. Mm. And I
think that's the difference, isn't it?
I think because you know, the people who run football are going to be more often than not, essentially it's obsessed with the product and, you know, the money that comes along with the product and the commercial value of the product. It's the thought process just goes, this is great, people like this, let's do more of this. Mm-hmm. And there's not really any thought beyond that. So to me, it's not the access thing. I think the access is amazing. I think really, if you break it down to its essence, you know, going to a game is amazing for different reasons, but I don't think it's objectively better now in terms of what you get to see than what the TV coverage is so good, and the quality of the broadcast is so good now, HD, Ultra HD, and all this access and all the camera angles and that kind of stuff. The football itself, you can watch as good now at home. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not talking about the experience and about what it means to be a football fan, because that's obviously slightly different. So I think the access is actually good. I don't think you can get too much access. I think for the money people pay, they arguably should get more access.
Yeah, 100%.
It's more about football than access for me.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. In terms of access, yeah, people are ripped off for football coverage in this country. You know, the fact that we get at the moment, and I realise it will change with the next TV deal, you need a number of subscriptions, which cost a lot of money, and you get to see, what, 50% of the games. It's absolutely absurd, really. But I don't know. I think I would totally agree with what Luke says about there is simply too much football. And I think in terms of, it's not just about access to the product, it's about how good the product actually is. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, Pete, I'm feeling that quite a lot at the moment. But what you were saying, Luke, about there being game, it's really a legacy of COVID. And COVID should have changed the football calendar, but it just hasn't.
It was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, in fact, on the other hand, I think because the people commercializing football see it as entertainment rather than sport, it's just about keeping the show on the road. And you're right, I think from a fan's perspective, where you're not really getting the quality of product, and from like our perspective, and I think quite frankly, when there were games all the time during COVID, which is kind of what we're talking about, isn't it? The fact that, you know, everyone being able to see all the games being, say in Spain, for example, for years and years and years, they've staggered kickoffs in a way that you can sit there and watch every game if you want to. There are very rarely two games happening at the same time until you get to the crunch time at the end of the season. Mm. What that leads to is actually no ability to absorb the football.
Yeah.
It leads to quite poor analysis, if any analysis at all, because you're just watching it and you're onto the next one, as you were saying.
So in Spain, I mean, I presume they do, or in other countries, I love the tradition we have here of Match of the Day, the highlights package at the end of the footballing day, which traditionally is a Saturday, and obviously we have it now on a Sunday as well. I assume in other countries they would have something similar, would they?
Not always.
Okay, so that's it. Okay, what I adore about Saturdays is it is the football day, traditionally.
Right. And it's football day.
Yeah. And actually, what I'd like to see with broadcasting is, you're right, I think if there's games on all the time with COVID, it was obviously different in COVID because none of us were doing anything. So you thought, well, at least I've got all this kind of entertainment, if you see what I mean. I'd like far more games now kicking off at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, as is sort of the tradition, and you can watch those games, because you won't be able to watch all these games. You'll pick your team or the game that interests you the most, but you won't be able to absorb the football. And then you have that tradition of later on, you watch Match of the Day. And there's something about that, almost like the sort of unofficial community, if you like. You know that the rest of the country who are into this are all sitting down together about it. I think they do this with American football, don't they?
So American football, because the country is much bigger.
Yeah.
It's regionalized, and then there's a national game on the Sunday night. So so if you were in New England, you might get a Giants game or a Patriots game or whatever. If you're on the West Coast, you might get a Seattle Seahawks game or you know, Chargers game, whatever. And then on the Sunday night, they select a game that's national that's shown around across the country.
Okay, so okay, maybe it's slightly different then. But I do, I mean, I think the Sunday afternoon game is quite good still. I think that's kind of become a bit of a tradition as well. But do you see what I mean, though? If everyone is like, right, 3 o'clock on a Saturday, as was tradition and as still is by and large the case, that's when you can have access to those games. But the early kickoffs, the late kickoffs, that, oh, we've got to travel the length and breadth of the country to be there at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock on a Sunday or something like that. I think that you have access, but those 3 o'clock games, you will watch your team or the game that you're interested in the most, but you won't be completely saturated with the football coverage because you won't be able to watch game after game after game, as you said in Spain.
Now, that's the main objection that I say I would say the pro blackout people have had, isn't it? The fact that it'll be difficult for lower division teams. I personally don't think that's correct, because I think the way that people support football, has totally changed.
If I'm wrong,
because it's, I agree with you. As someone who supports a fourth division team, and that doesn't mean that I speak for all people who support. This is just my opinion as a supporter of a fourth tier team, and as someone who takes my children to the football, for example, I would say, as Luke was saying, that there's a massive difference between, for them even, there's a massive difference between going to the game and watching it on TV. Mm-hmm. And if they've got the opportunity to go to the game, they don't care what game's on TV. They would always rather go. Yeah. So it's comparing apples and oranges. I don't think it is about that at all. And quite frankly, if League Two or League One teams want more people to come to the game, charge less to get in, make it a better experience.
Do you think that the broadcasters have been slightly wrong-footed by the illegal streamers getting more professional?
It's a big part of it, isn't it?
Because beforehand, you'd go to a website and you'd have to click a million different kind of plugins and stuff like that. But now the bloke down the street is watching 3pm kickoff his telly on a Fire Stick, and there's no adverts, and he's just paying 10 quid a month or whatever, illegally. Mm. So like, it's everything to do with the broadcasters trying to second guess an industry, a cottage industry at this point, who's satisfying people who want to watch their football.
So your argument, presumably then, on the back of what Andy's saying, is that people are doing that anyway. So people are doing it anyway.
People are doing it anyway. And also, like, whereas 3 years ago, I could probably access some, because I'm part internet.
I can access.
And I think if you've grown up around the internet, you become a bit more, I don't know, you have a bit of a second second sight when you see like a pop-up's happening or something's broken down or something like that. Mm. But like, you know, my father-in-law and my dad couldn't, or my mum couldn't figure out what's gone wrong with this stream, sort of thing. But nowadays, this kind of emancipation of like men and women of a certain age can watch football quite easily with these little sticks. You press a button, it's on.
So ultimately, then the point is,
Dave down the road,
it's easy to do it anyway. So maybe they need to stop being outmaneuvered on that.
Yeah. But what Marcus has suggested, that no one else I've heard has really suggested so far, is that idea of creating a 3pm Saturday community.
But I think there's a problem with it that you guys haven't covered.
Well, go on then.
And I think you've
go on.
Andy's kind of, I don't actually disagree with what Andy said, but I don't think that's the point. I don't think it's an issue that, for the reasons you've said, for League One, League Two, or even Championship teams, I think the blackout is a real boon for non-league grassroots clubs.
No, but I would say that applies to them as well.
I don't think it does. And the reason I don't think it does is because when the announcement for the new deal, which came out earlier this week, was talked about, and I know this anecdotally anyway, because I know some people at the club local to me where I grew up. Mm. I've got a good friend of mine who's a manager at non-league level, a decent non-league level. And I also go to Peckham Town. And I think actually it might not have been the episode you did when you went there.
Well, I never went back. They didn't have any green tea.
No, exactly, yeah. But it might have been another time I've been there. I might have got confused. It might not have made the edit. But they said something along these lines as well, is that the reality of a non-league club, a grassroots club, when they're playing a game slightly later in the day, or they're playing a game when the FA Cup final's on, whatever, They get 300-400 people fewer coming.
Yeah, but
that,
I mean, you've just said the FA Cup final, though.
But it's also when they have to play games in an evening, they'll get far fewer people because people will be watching Champions League games, for example.
Okay, but that's the Champions League. So to respond to your point, also with that 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon thing, you know, teams playing in the Europa Conference League and all would still play on the Sunday. I'm not saying that the Premier League has to play everything on that time and that Saturday. You can still have your Sunday games. You can still have all that. But I mean, is someone who say loves going to Peckham Town or wherever? Are they really going to go, oh, yeah, but Crystal Palace are playing West Ham today?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they are.
And that's a poor example because Crystal Palace are right next door to Peckham.
You've seen, for example, with Dulwich Hamlet, because they've made it a more community. I know people are quite sniffy about it and think it's quite middle class, but basically...
They've got green tea. Yeah.
They do.
But the Dulwich Hamlet example, Andy, is that what Dulwich Hamlet have done, people have missed the point about. They whether it's sniffy or it's middle class or it's not, what Dulwich Hamlet have done, which I never hear this talked about when people talk about Dulwich Hamlet, and for those who are listening who don't know who they are, they're a non-league team in South London who are incredibly successful
and at getting people in.
If there's an international break, you have 500 people outside who can't get in, and they're almost an outlier for non-league clubs of that size. The way they've done it is nothing to do with you know, anything else other than the fact that they've taken the time to understand who their audience are.
They engage the community.
And engage with them.
That's why Southend are giving out arm tattoos.
But they're also well-funded, and that stuff also costs money. It's very well saying to my friend who manages Baffin's Milton Rovers in Portsmouth, oh, you want to do is you want to engage with your local community and do this and do that. And he'll say, well, great, I've got two pennies to rub together.
No, that's why you need volunteers. At that level or at any level, really, where people haven't got a lot of money.
And when are you going to volunteer?
I volunteer in many, many ways.
Yeah.
Volunteer my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, the debate rages on.
So, before we move on very, very quickly, I just wanted to say that it's interesting to me that the big takeaway from this new deal, which runs from 2025 to 2029, is that not just the money, because the money's obscene and it's actually maintained its value fairly well, given the state of the economy, I would say, is that they've preserved the 3 p.m. blackout again. So at least until 2029 now, 5.5 years' time, we're still going to have no games at all in what you suggested. That's not going
to
happen.
And that then forces games to be at different times and blah, 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 blah. And, you know.
I think less football, but more access would be my short answer to Ronnie's question.
That's not fair. Not ridiculous.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You better get your finger out all right and make sure that you get their fucking results.
We've got one here from Tom. Excluding England games, spells, what football match would you change the result of?
He's done well to say excluding England games.
I think we all know exactly why he's done that.
Yeah. I think most of us would probably choose an England game, but we're not going to choose England game.
Yeah.
We're going to choose England
games. We can't.
Games.
Welcome panel 66.
Welcome.
It was stop fucking going on about it.
What, 2-1 in full time?
Yeah.
And it's a 5-0 home battering by West Germany. Get on with it.
Get
next.
On with it.
You didn't deserve it. Outrageous.
Peter.
Put that in your song.
Yeah. Peter, which result would you change?
The one I spent a considerable amount of money on at Wembley last year's season, I think, please.
Really? It'd be the cup final with Newcastle yeah. would win it.
I think even the Hawaii, where 5-0 might have, I think that... Plastered over some cracks. Yeah, that's what you do, isn't it?
Do you know what?
Emotionally, with a lot of people who sort of enjoyed Kevin Keegan's entertainers, I just think it was significant, but it was indicative of bigger problems at yeah. St. Joseph's Park at the time. So I think you look back and you sort of go, I'm glad that happened, but yeah. fundamentally, you haven't won anything.
Yeah, I think that one result genuinely did pop into my head about this was when Manchester United went to St James's Park and won 1-0 with that Cantona.
Yes, same.
Was you going to say that? Because because had Newcastle won that game and been quite convincing, you never know. And so it was sort of fairly early on in the season. Or well, it wasn't like in the last month or two of the season.
It was like March, wasn't it?
Or was it March, was it?
Yeah, it was late.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
It was like that was the bit where the title tied.
That, I suppose that's my point. Anyway, you whenever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like...
It was the 4th of March.
Yeah, apparently. Okay. So I should have known better then.
Who gave the assist to Eric Cantona?
It was a cross from
Giggs?
Phil Neville.
Fizzer.
Fizzer.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Giggs was a very safe bet.
Why did he ask it? Yeah. He's not wanting to mention Ryan Giggs' name, is he?
Here's another safe bet that if you really think about it, you'll be able to answer straight away, all of you.
Yeah.
Who was the referee?
Paul Durkin.
David Ellery.
Ah.
You had a 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
Is it that minds? Either one of those two might referee every single game.
But I remember it came from the left, you see, and I thought, well, it's not. You're not going to go Dennis Irwin. You
know? No.
Anyway, so that game.
Because you think that would have been a sliding doors moment. Newcastle may have gone on to do what they
wanted. So let's say it would have been.
They lost 1-0 away to Southampton that season. Southampton came 17th, so... That would have been an easy one to win.
You can change that one. You know.
Let's all change a Newcastle game each so they won the title in 96.
Well, Andy, I'll let you... Because if Newcastle had won that game, let's say they go on and win the title, it would be wonderful. I know it's Keegan-esque that they didn't win the title.
An almost pure title win, even though they didn't have a lot of money.
I just think that would be such a cherished memory for so many people. And not just Newcastle fans, I think for all of us.
I don't think it changes much, though, does it? In the grand scheme
of things.
No,
I think it does. I think that winning the title, I think it does change, certainly for Newcastle United.
Well, of course it changed it for them.
But if it changes
Keegan's path, totally.
Yeah, indeed. I think he gets the England job quicker. I think that...
He quits in a different toilet.
You know, if you're...
Trap three. Yeah.
I think that if you were to offer this to Keegan, what is there? Some sort of magical situation. You go, there you are, Keggy. You've just got to open that door.
Yeah.
And then the title will be yours opens the wrong door and falls down the triple. So, but my actual answer would be, even though I've just sort of gone on there, is I would love to change the Europa League final, Fulham and Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Right.
And for Fulham to win that because...
It was a strong charge, wasn't it?
It was brutal.
Completely
it was absolutely brutal.
The Fulham were, you know, Zamora was injured, you know, but Atletico Madrid was Forlan and Aguero up front.
But what it did is it really showed the shortcomings of that system where a team can come down into the Europa League and really, in that case, blow a great story out of the water. Mm.
Well,
and a story that Fulham had fucking earned as well, by the way.
When you say blow
it
out of the water, I mean, they took to 117th minute to score, you know, and it was...
Which makes it worse.
Well, I suppose, I mean, Fulham are playing for penalties. There's no two ways about that. But, you know, so when Fulham were down in the semi-final to Hamburg, you know, and you think, oh, you're crashing out. A semi-final is amazing. But you don't really, only the fans and maybe a few others remember the semi-final. I think you've got to get to the final. I think there's something about getting to the final where you play the most amount of games you can. So a final is there's, I think it sticks in the memory way more than a semi-final for the most part. But of course, if you win it, you know, that would have been their first major trophy they'd have won. It would have just meant so much to it would have been such a story for a little club like Fulham.
Yeah.
To win that, I think
having said what I just said, you know, Newcastle winning the Premier League in that golden period they had, and Fulham winning the Europa League at that point, they are great stories that football would have been richer for.
Yeah. Paul Brisson with a winner's medal, yes please.
Yeah. Roy Hodgson doing a David Moyes after the
Darren Huckabee would have got one.
Danny Murphy getting more media gigs.
There you go. Even more.
And I like Danny.
We love Danny. We do. Luke, what's yours?
I went for one that I thought about not doing because I was almost entirely sure you were going to pick it.
Go on.
And the one I thought would change because I think it's actually a service I'm doing for the whole of football. And dare I say...
Cool, it's a big build-up.
Humanity as well.
Go on.
I'll give you a couple of clues and I bet you get it straight away.
Al Nasser beating...
Ronaldo's club in Saudi Arabia only won a game 4-0 and I'd like them to win it 5-0.
Are you going maybe Simeone Atletico?
I'm going the quarterfinals of the 2010 World Cup. Uruguay beat Ghana 4-2 on penalties, denying them the chance to be the first ever African team to be in the semi-final of the World Cup. It was horrific.
You're spot on.
And you know, they duked out a 1-0 draw in the last minute, I think, of extra time. It was certainly towards the end of extra time. Mm-hmm. Luis Suarez handled the ball on the line to stop Ghana scoring. Asamoah Gyan then missed the penalty and Uruguay won on penalties. It was the most villainous behaviour and result, I think, certainly, probably, I've ever seen in international football.
Big shame.
I can't think of anything that's more than this. I mean, you could talk about Battiston getting butchered by Schumacher.
No, but that was before our time. And
this was like... The reason I think it was so villainous is because they were reveling in their villainous status. Mm-hmm. They kind of embraced it and they liked it.
We do love them for that as well.
But I think
not in that moment, though,
it was such a bend the rules to breaking point situation where actually,
well, they bent the rules. He broke them.
But it's almost like the rules. Almost like the rules didn't do the job they're supposed to do in that case.
Yes.
Because they got an advantage from it in the end.
There wasn't sufficient rulage to contain the villainy.
I don't know what you would have done.
And that passage of play as well.
Yeah.
There's a chance to put it in. It's a proper scrum. You go, it's painful to watch.
I'm not going to kind of cast...
It's a great answer to the question.
I'm not going to cast this as someone, we're British or English or we would never have done this. I'm not saying that. It's very much down to the individual. But I think there are, I would say, maybe north of 90% of top-level players wouldn't have done that.
They might not have thought of doing it.
Maybe not.
But I think it's a great answer. And it's funny, actually, because when he said excluding England games, I think in my mind I just wrote off international football.
that's as far as it goes for you, is it?
Well, we're going to finish, Marcus, if that's all right, with you, with a positive refereeing story from Lars. Not that one.
Could be that one.
I mean, it could be that one because the subject line is 80-year-old Norwegian referee. Our protagonist is Jan Kjell Johansen. He's turned 80 years old, but he's still refereeing. He's been a referee in both football and handball for 57 and 34 seasons, respectively. Is that the same time? Is that kind of like he switched halfway through?
Do you know what I felt when I first read that? I thought, he must hate his family.
I just want to be out.
Absolutely hate his family.
Getting 20 quid on a cold Sunday morning. Unbelievable. He's refereed to the Norwegian top flight in football and the European Cup in handball. Ooh. So he is and was a very competent referee in his time. On Wednesday, October 25th, he refereed his 5,000th match, according to himself. So that's around...
Is he Romario?
Romario-esque, isn't it? So that's around 3,500 football matches and 1,500 handball matches. The match was an under-15s game in my local area and was his 13th fixture this year. The four match officials for this game were a combined 251 years old. and including... Jan Kjell himself and his son Anders.
Oh, his son's involved. That's nice.
His son was also a Norwegian top flight referee in his time, but retired at 35. When Jan Kjell is not walking quickly around a football pitch, his own words, he is mentoring young referees and has twice sent parents home who couldn't behave themselves this season.
Yeah.
He is a true legend of the game. Round of applause for Jan Kjell Johansen.
Yeah, I tried to Google him, but I couldn't find much about him. No. He just keeps a low profile. He's always on the pitch.
Start a blog. Write a book. You're 80 for crying out loud. Come on.
The other week, he sent off Dickie Borthwick. For those who remember that reference.
Explain that. The world's oldest footballer?
He was at a time. I think he was, 78? And he was still playing in a league in, I want to say the West Country.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like Gloucestershire or somewhere.
Apparently he's from Weymouth. I'm looking him up now.
Okay.
And when this article was written in the Sport
Gazette, I've gone too high because it's Dorset then.
Yeah, I don't know what year this was written. So, but he's 84 and still playing.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, I mean, I don't want to be rude, but is he really still playing?
What does the article say?
It says that he's the oldest footballer in the world.
There you go.
And he's been playing football for 78 years since he was six.
Yeah.
But that's, I can remember playing Sunday league football and occasionally you'd get a really old ref.
Yeah, we had one a couple of weekends ago. Did you? Last weekend he was...
And they'll just referee the game in a completely different way.
Yeah.
By which I mean they'll let everything go. Because they've seen it all.
Well, he seemed to be very over the sin bin new policy, so he sin bin about two players.
It's probably quite difficult to... That's the one thing that's kind of underrated about grassroots refereeing. Is there's quite a lot of new stuff that comes in all the time.
Yeah.
And sin binning, which they trialled at grassroots level and are now going to bring in, it feels a bit odd that they get, like, essentially, at best, semi-pro officials to look after it first.
Yeah.
Because it should be a professional thing.
And I would say, like, we had a chat with the referee, came over and basically explained what they've been asked to focus on this season. Oh. Like we were proper footballers or something. I give him the finger. Get it, ass.
What was it?
It was encroaching on free kicks, standing in front of free kicks, and if you stand in front of a free kick and the player boots the ball at you to sort of go get out of the way, they were gonna basically turn the free kick around effectively. I think that was the ruling.
And what were you in goal at the time?
No, I was right back. It's more chance to make more damaging moves, one would suggest.
Never say that again.
Drew five all. Two of them were my fault.
Only two.
The Donaldson tax is a very consistent tax in Sunday League football, isn't it?
It is.
He always puts at the end of his chat, like normally, if I say to you, Marcus, did you play football the weekend? Yeah, how'd you get on? Blah, blah, fine. That's it. Pete always will put an addendum on every single weekend report by saying how many goals were exactly his fault.
But even if he was not a fault for any of the goals, we'll go, kept giving the ball away.
Yeah.
There'll always be something.
Hello to Dan, who Facebook messaged me saying that he was playing on the opposition and he listens to the ramble.
Nice.
Don't tell anyone about my performance.
Did he get any goals himself?
Maybe profited.
I think he came on at half time and then they shipped about four goals. So sounds like Dan had a bad day at the office, same as me.
I like it if he had said, I was lining up to play Sunday football last weekend. I saw you and my eyes lit up.
Going back to Jan Kjell Johansson, you know as well that full referee kit and he's getting his legs out.
Oh, big time. Yeah. 100%.
It doesn't matter. No matter how cold it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's Norway as well.
Mm. Yeah.
I love that the old school boys, no. Any chance to get my knees, to a bit of air to the knees.
They make them tough up there because I go to New England very regularly and it gets very cold there. And a lot of my family are a bit older. The conversations quite consistently are like, do you know what? I'm not sure how many more winters I can do up here. I think I might move south.
Right, yeah.
And they'd be in their 50s, maybe in their early 60s.
That's why Pete moved down from Hartlepool.
It is absolutely right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the fjord water keeps you all young and stuff, doesn't it?
They're just tough. If you're 80 years old, you're still getting up there early and doing your thing.
Absolutely, yes.
Although isn't the handball played inside?
But he's still doing the... We're not focusing on that.
So it's the
half
idea.
Of football and then half of handball to warm yourself up.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah. Maybe the idea was 34 years ago, he thought... Football's a young man's game.
and started handball
and then just never got around to giving it up.
Maybe just really good at giving handball. Like fat yellow cards.
Handball!
Yeah. Oh, there's a game for you.
Set everyone off.
It'd never have been busier than in the modern game.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there we are, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Mailbag. We'll be back with another one of these next week, of course, because we're now a weekly baby. Do get in touch with us. Remember to tweet us on X at Football Ramble. Message us on Instagram at Football Ramble. And, of course, email us, show@footballramble.com. And join us on Monday, of course, for the Ramble, where we review the weekend's action. And don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app, everybody. Luke, what have you got on your screen?
Whoa.
Harry Maguire.
Read it.
Harry Maguire wins the Premier League Player of the Month award for November. Yeah.
Yeah. Fun.
Just saying, it's fun. I thought games. Something you might want to open the show with on Monday.
A win's a win's a win.
Exactly.
Thank you, Luke Moore.
Thank you.
Thank you, PED.
Ta-ta.
Thank you, Andy B.
Stop.
And thank you, Jan Kjell Johansson. Good luck in whichever match you're refereeing this week.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.